I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We are awaiting our Seattle insider, though it could be a few more minutes. Oh, never mind. I'm getting information on the fly. I don't really know how this is going to go since he's still in the press box, but we will attempt to get a connection there. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for weighing in about Monday Night Football and also the trades that have been most impactful in the NFL this year. Man, even going back over the list of trades, there are a lot of them that you might forget in the spring and then in the early summer, obviously on into the season. 855-212-4227. That's our number. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the homes of their dreams with their help, and they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. So we're pleased to welcome now Greg Bell, who covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg, I heard a lot of people who were there at the game on Monday night describing it as a playoff atmosphere. What did it feel like to you?
Well, it did, Amy, except it was about as sloppy as a playoff game could possibly be. It was thrilling. It was exhaustive. It was all of that for five whole periods. But they can't, either team can play this way and succeed in the playoffs. Seven combined turnovers, four from the Seahawks. First time they've won a game with committing four turnovers since 1984. That's a long time ago, and that's not going to get it done in the postseason. I thought Jimmy Garoppolo, for as much pressure as he felt, needs to hold on to the ball a lot more strongly than he did in the pocket. And Russell Wilson made a completely uncharacteristic underthrow of Jacob Hollister on the first drive of overtime that if he had thrown it as he normally does and correctly, that was a touchdown. The game would have been over right there. Only the second interception of the season for Russell Wilson. But in the end, Amy, the most decisive and encouraging thing for the Seahawks, beside the obvious of getting right in this NFC West race with six games to go, is the pass rush for the first time showed up. Jadeveon Clowney was all over the place. Why they traded for Houston for him. Five sacks on the night, 10 quarterback hits, by far the season highs for the Seahawks tonight. And they did it without blitzing a lot of the times, which was coming in the only way they were getting sacks. They were 25th in the league coming in sacks, and what they did tonight won the game for them.
Why do you think it was different tonight against the Niners?
Well, if you hear Clowney and Bobby Wagner talk in the locker room afterwards and a couple other Seahawks defenders, they said they took a lot of personal affront to all the attention the 49ers pass rush and front four was getting for getting home, Bosa and Buckner and Armstead. They said, frankly, they got tired of hearing it, and they thought the effort and the energy from the start of the game was going to be the most important part of tonight. Jerron Reed, who had done nothing in his three games back from a six-game suspension to start the season, had a sack and a half, had a sack right away early in the first quarter. Clowney did as well, forced a fumble, returned a fumble for a touchdown. Just game-changing plays that the Seahawks defensive line has not had. If it sounds like an intangible, but to hear them tell it, the biggest change was motivation and effort and energy early in the game.
When you think about the opportunities that the offense had and then squandered, as you talk about, it's sloppy. But in those moments, late in games, there's still something special about Russell Wilson. He shows it on Monday Night Football. He showed it in overtime against the Buccaneers a week ago. And just the fact that the Seahawks are 5-0 on the road this season for the first time in franchise history, how have you seen him even elevate his game more this year?
Well, that's a good point, that the Seahawks feel they have the most decisive advantage at the game's most important position every week. And they did tonight with the game on the line. I thought maybe the 49ers' biggest mistake of many at the end of the game was throwing three straight incomplete passes and only using 14 seconds on that drive late in overtime to give the Seahawks the ball back with no timeouts and giving Russell Wilson that chance from his own 36-yard line to win the game, and he did. This year, though, Amy, second year with offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer, Schottenheimer has really learned what Wilson does best and tailored his offense much more to that than it was last season. A lot of misdirection, rollouts, short throws in the pocket, things that Wilson's accuracy is best at, Schottenheimer does a lot more. And they are using a lot more of what has worked in the past to the entire team's advantage, such as Tyler Lockett's pet routes across the field. Seahawks like to run play action to the left, roll Russell Wilson out to the right, and send Lockett from right to left across the field. They've done that for 2 or 3 years for big plays, and the whole league sees it. Well, this year, the Seahawks have won 2 games on pass plays, variations of that pet play, sending DK Metcalf behind it or Tyler Lockett the opposite direction that he normally goes. And those are 2 examples of how Schottenheimer has evolved this offense to the strength of Russell Wilson, getting him outside and making big, accurate throws. He's the best in the league right now. And to give the ball back, like I said, with the 49ers going 3 and out with 3 incompletion, to give the best quarterback in the game another chance with no timeouts when they could have really iced the end of that, at least given the Seahawks not much of a chance on the clock at the end of overtime. I think that was, looking back, you want to be aggressive, of course, to win the game for San Francisco, but they ended up giving the best player in the best position a chance to win.
Greg Bell with the Tacoma News Tribune from the Bay Area covering Monday Night Football here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. You mentioned Tyler Lockett. What happened to him?
He got a leg contusion, Pete Carroll said, a lower leg contusion that was so severe that they're worried about the blood pooling in the central part of in a one focal part of his leg, and they are considering not flying him back. The team's about to leave right now to get off the ground on their plane, and there's some consideration to keep him in the Bay Area overnight. Worried about the blood in the lower part of his leg and trying to fly at altitude with that. So there's a chance he will stay here tonight. Pete Carroll quoted as a, quote, pretty severe situation post-game tonight, but one he thinks the Seahawks doctors have gotten ahead of, and that in perhaps 13 days when they play again after a bye week, Lockett could be okay to play at Philadelphia November 24th. It's a big, big void, though. He's on a pace for career highs in catches and yards. He's become the replacement for retired Doug Baldwin as the trusted guy on third downs and in the red zone. And it was noticeable in overtime, Amy. They didn't have 16 out there. It was Malik Turner making plays, and Josh Gordon in his 10th day with the team. That was who he was relying on. And then Jacob Hollister, the only tight end left healthy on the roster right now, that end up making plays without Lockett in overtime.
Well, that's another thing that to me really stands out about this team is the turnover slash injuries to the receiving core. You mentioned Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett stepping into that role almost seamlessly. And yet, other than him, it's just been a changing landscape for Wilson, which to me makes the start to the season even more impressive.
You're right. Wilson's playing so well, he can make you and I look good at receiver, frankly,
yes!
right now. Maybe not me, but you. And he's so accurate with passes that almost at times guys can't help but catch it. Almost sticks to their face mask. But no doubt, DK Metcalf has been a find as a second-round pick. That everyone knew how a freak he was coming out of the combine, but they thought he was a one-trick guy that could just run go routes like Ole Miss sent him on. Well, he does a lot more than that. He's a really polished receiver who can run short routes, crossing routes, can catch in coverage. He had a couple plays tonight that he dropped the ball or at least had it knocked out of his hands by defenders. But in general this year, he's been very good and better than advertised in much more varied ways. I mentioned Malik Turner, a guy that was an undrafted rookie out of Illinois last year who stepped up tonight with 2 big plays in overtime. Now they add Josh Gordon to all that. And if they can get Lockett back off injury like they think they can, they have a 2013 All-Pro who thinks he's back, and the Seahawks think he's back to health. The Patriots, of course, waiving him after a knee injury and other things last month. They think they have receivers that can get open down the field now that they've added Gordon on top of Lockett and Metcalf.
What have they said about Josh Gordon early on? Because, as you know, when New England decided to part ways, there's all kinds of reports swirling about why they decided to let him go.
Well, no evidence of that yet. Of course, they haven't lost a game, and he's been thrown to a few times in his first game tonight, so all's well. But there's no evidence of him being late or missing practices or meetings. And and no evidence that he is unhappy here. He said this is the place he's wanted to go for years, that he's known Russell Wilson since 2014, and that he and Wilson have talked about him possibly coming to Seattle at some time. It took, of course, the Patriots releasing him to get the Seahawks to get that opportunity. The Seahawks were surprised, Amy, that 27 other teams passed on him on the waiver claim. The Seahawks were the 28th in the list because of their 7-2 record in claiming him. Nobody else did. That tells you how much the teams are scared off by the 5 suspensions and all the other issues that he's had off the field, the substance abuse. He said he's happy here. This is the place he wants to be because of Russell Wilson. And basically, Saturday, Gordon said Russell Wilson can make anyone look good, and he's hoping that Gordon has a rebirth here the last 6 games.
George, I'm sorry, Greg, please forgive me. I was thinking George Kittle, and then I look.
My grandfather was named George, so I'm honored. Thank you, Amy.
Sorry. Greg Bell, Seahawks reporter.
It's 3 in the morning back there. I'm not going to hold you down.
Oh, gosh. Well, this is I keep on West Coast time. This is my regular witching hours. He covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. So I heard a couple. I mean, Pete Carroll makes jokes about how this was, this was something that was so easy. You get your nachos and your walk and you just put your feet back up anyway. Yeah. But Russell Wilson talked about this being one of the wildest games that he was a part of, but also such a significant win for them. And certainly in the division, that's huge, handing the Niners their first loss. But why do you think this is a game that, as you say, the defense gets up for and they really were able to surge all the way through to the end?
They won't say this, Amy, but look, if they lose tonight, they're 3 games back in the loss column with 6 games to play from the 49ers. And barring an absolute collapse, that's over. The 49ers would win the division. Mm. The Rams are 5-4. The Seahawks would have been 6-3. Now the Seahawks win this game, and they're a half game back. And they have the 49ers coming to them week 17, the final Sunday of the regular season up in Seattle. So that's how big and pivotal this win was. The race is either on or off. It was going to be over if McLaughlin makes that kick in overtime. The 49ers are going to win the division, barring an absolute collapse. And now the Seahawks control their fate in the NFC West. If they can win out or stay within a half game of San Francisco, more likely. San Francisco's got some tough games coming up, including at Baltimore, and they got the Rams one more time. But if the Seahawks can stay within a half game heading into Week 17, they'll have the 49ers at home for a chance to win the division title. And this team, the Seahawks, they've been to the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years.
Right.
But not recently have they had home games in the playoffs. And that is when they have gone out in the second rounds. Maybe they win a first-round wild card playoff game, but then the second round, they're out. And that the home playoff games is what Pete Carroll talked about after the night of the playoff loss at Dallas in January. He said, look, we got to get enough wins in October, November to have 12 so wins to win a division so you can get the home games. The only 3 times this franchise has been to the Super Bowl is when they've had home field advantage in the playoffs and all the teams have to come out to South Alaska and play in the 40-degree rain with people screaming. it's a tough task for teams to win in January in Seattle. Tonight's win keeps the possibility of Seattle having home playoff games.
Mm. Okay, Greg, this is a personal question, so completely off this track that we're on right now. But I just saw on your Twitter that you're a West Point grad.
I am, ma'am. Yes, I am. 1993.
Amazing. Well, thank you for your service. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Also appreciate your time tonight. And I'm sorry I called you George.
I told you it's my grandfather's name. My whole family would be proud of you. Thank you. I'm not insulted at all.
Okay, good. Well, we would love to have you on the show again. Covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg, thanks so much for a couple of minutes, even though you're still in the press box.
Part of the job, as you know. Thank you,
yes.
Amy. Thank
all
you,
right.
Ma'am.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Alex Erickson wide to the right. Takes the snap, looks to the right, throws. Intercepted. Marcus Peters has it along the near sideline, 30. He's heading to midfield. Bengals 40, 30, 20, 10. Second time, pick 6 for Marcus Peters.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's great when you can see a player that your team traded for making an immediate impact, paying immediate dividends in the form of, well, a touchdown, an interception, a big block on the offensive line, a sack. I mean, I could go on and on. Quarterbacks obviously have the greatest ability to be measured by stats. And sometimes you can't necessarily measure an impact player by the stat line. In the case of Marcus Peters, in the case of the Baltimore Ravens, making that move for Peters, even as the Rams are attempting to divest some of their salary and get a little bit younger in their secondary, it's great when you have not only a stat line, but a highlight to measure impact. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That's one of the more recent trades that was made right before the deadline. Marcus Peters going from the Rams to the Ravens on the 16th of October. So we're talking about not even a month ago. I'm asking you, in the year 2019, what are the NFL trades that have made the greatest impact? And as we were brainstorming names, it's actually, not only is it hard to remember them all, but it's fascinating the number of impact players this season that have changed uniforms via trade. So not free agency, not getting claimed off waivers like a Josh Gordon that we were just talking about with Seattle. Trades from one team to another, whether for other players or for draft picks. And so I wrote a list, actually. I ran out of room on my card. But some of the names that popped up and some of the names that we came up with together as we were talking about it. Yes, Jadeveon Clowney, huge impact for the Seahawks tonight. Yes, Minkah Fitzpatrick. Yes, Marcus Peters. How about Jalen Ramsey? Another big one going from Jacksonville to Los Angeles. Wide receivers recently. Emmanuel Sanders, Mohamed Sanu going from Atlanta to New England. Kenny Stills, that one goes back to the beginning of the season, along with the offensive lineman Laremy Tunsil went from Miami to Houston. Oh, and while we're talking receivers, Odell Beckham Jr., first and a third round pick, the Giants got in return for him when they sent him to the Browns, and Antonio Brown. Third and fifth round picks that Oakland gave up to get him. And boy, did that explode in their faces. How about quarterbacks? Josh Rosen, Ryan Tannehill, Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, all trades this year. And all of them with various opportunities to start. What have been the most impactful trades of 2019? So post last year, as much as I would love to include Amari Cooper, Khalil Mack can't do it. Kenyon Drake certainly made a major splash in his debut with the Arizona Cardinals. Yet another Miami trade product. My brain's going a mile a minute. So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Dan on Twitter, D Ford, by adding Ford in the offseason with a trade and drafting Nick Bosa, the 49ers' existing defensive line improved exponentially. So a lot of what have you done for me lately, right? So it's easy to look at Minkah Fitzpatrick, certainly easy to highlight Jadeveon Clowney. But there are a lot of other guys that have changed teams via trade and are settling in nicely. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Let's talk to Will, who's in Baltimore. Welcome to After Hours.
How you doing, Amy?
I'm good.
That's good. Of course, I'm a Ravens fan, and I do want to keep it 100. I'm going to keep it real with you. That Minkah Fitzpatrick trade mm-hmm. that Pittsburgh Steelers pulled off is paying huge dividends.
Yes.
So I'm going to give props what props is due. But besides you, because you do give credit where credit is due, Marcus Peters, since the Ravens has picked him up, that secondary has been playing lights out. Would you agree?
They're much better, yes. I would agree with that. The defense has gotten a lot tighter. Now, I think it's a product of some of those guys just playing better, and I would say Earl Thomas is a part of that too. But Marcus Peters brings a veteran presence, good athleticism. So, yeah, I would definitely say he was a fantastic pickup for them for what they needed.
I agree 100% with you. And I have one question. Last year, I wonder who it was that finally made the decision to sit Flacco and start Jackson. That had to have been the top decision made the whole season.
You don't think it was John Harbaugh?
Well, yeah, I think he had something to do with it, yes, but I think it was, you know, they got, you know, the brain trust up front.
Oh, no, I think ultimately it's Harbaugh's decision. Yeah, I'm pretty confident. Not only do I know he's earned that equity after all the time there, but it was ultimately his choice to, as you say, bench his veteran quarterback and completely change the offense. Now, in order to implement that, he definitely got help. I'm sure he ran it up the flagpole, but I'm pretty confident that Harbaugh has that ability and that type of equity and credibility after all his years in Baltimore.
Okay. Appreciate your time.
All right, sir.
And get rid of those leaves.
Oh, gosh, not yet. I told my mom on the phone on Monday night that my backyard does not exist until the weekend.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You know, it's one of those deals where you get to this time of the year and because we sleep during the daytime, or I do, I guess I won't speak for the guys, I sleep during the daytime, and by the time you wake up, if you sleep 7 hours, 8 hours, I try to sleep 8 hours a couple of days a week, it's almost dark. So on Monday, in order to run before it was pitch black, I have to walk my dog and feed my zoo before I do anything else when I wake up. I had to get up an hour early, and it was still not quite black, but definitely dark as I was finishing up my run. And so there is absolutely no way I'm waking up early on a weekday afternoon to rake leaves. That is not happening. So the backyard, I'm just keeping the drapes closed. The backyard is not even out there until the weekend. But thanks for the reminder, Will. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. How about this stat from NFL Research? I told you I absolutely love these nerdy notes from NFL Research. With two touchdowns this season, Steelers safety Minkah Fitzpatrick has more TDs than Odell Beckham Jr., Leonard Fournette, and Devontae Adams.
That's nerd stuff.
But the reason why it caught my attention is because Odell Beckham Jr. was also a trade going back to the spring. And I wouldn't say a huge trade, a huge surprise. It was definitely a huge trade. A huge surprise that the Giants were shopping him because they were constantly talking about how they weren't shopping him. and yet they felt like it was a detriment to their locker room. I think at some point they were just done with the drama and they were looking to get assets in return. But Minkah Fitzpatrick, a couple of touchdowns for him on the defensive side of the ball. OBJ, Leonard Fournette, Devontae Adams. They've actually combined for two scores among the three of them, which is the same as Minkah Fitzpatrick. Wowzers. Football's weird sometimes, right?
Well, he got traded. To who?
Why? For what? Anyway, I would encourage you to follow this. If you like the nerd alerts, I would encourage you to follow this NFL Research account. It's, it's scintillating stuff.
Nerd alert!
For peeps like me. Larry says Emmanuel Sanders, the most impactful trade. And definitely the way he stepped onto the field with the Niners and that veteran presence that Jimmy Garoppolo needs. Only a couple of catches. He was targeted four times, but only a couple of catches. And he left. Shoot, I think it was late first half. We saw him walking to the locker room. And so that's not something I've heard an update on, but definitely would be a loss for them. And you could kind of see it without Greg Kittle. Oh my gosh, there, I just did it. Greg Bell, George Kittle. Without George Kittle and without Emmanuel Sanders, it leaves that receiving core for San Francisco with a whole lot to be desired. I mean, you don't have a ton of experience there. Tevin Coleman, for sure, is a dual threat guy, but there isn't a whole lot else there. Marquise Goodwin was targeted but did not have a catch tonight. And so at some point late in the game, I was thinking, wow, who in the world is Jimmy Garoppolo throwing to? All right, 855-212-4227. Also on Twitter and Facebook, you're weighing in as well. Thanks so much for being part of our show. It's our Twizzler Tuesday morning. If you're awake on a Tuesday morning, I'm still awake on a Monday night. But regardless, we're putting Monday in the rearview mirror. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Gets it high in the air, right center field. Hamilton looks back. He's at the wall. He leaped. It's gone! Home run number 53. And Pete Alonso stands alone as Major League Baseball's rookie home run king.
What's up, Mets fans? Pete Alonso here. You got your Rookie of the Year right here with you. I want to say thank you to everybody that came out and supported us, watched the games. Without you guys, we wouldn't have had that late season push there. You guys are extremely pivotal to us. I mean, we love you guys' rabid support of the team. Next year is going to be really, really exciting, and we got a great group of guys. Like, we're gonna do it next year. I think next year is going to be a really fun year, and we're all going to be pulling together. And LFGM, let's go Mets.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Wait, what does that mean? Pete Alonso has been so much fun in 2019 because of his energy, his excitement, his Twitter posts, his videos, and of course, his bombastic home runs, 53 of them. You hear one of them there on the Mets radio network. He also had 120 RBI. And really, the fact that it came, so much of his production came in the midst of a playoff push. I get it. They were there and then they were out. Then they were there and then they were out. But they were pressure-packed games for most of the season, the second half. And so for him to produce the way that he did, I think speaks even more about his moxie and his ability to show up on the biggest stages. He was a near unanimous selection for the National League Rookie of the Year. 29 of the 30 first place votes. Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros winning the award for the American League Rookie of the Year. So this is Major League Baseball award season, and then we'll see. Right now the GM meetings are going on for Major League Baseball, so not quite hot stove yet, but I wonder if it's going to be more of what we saw last winter and spring, where the biggest names didn't sign, and it was almost a stalemate and this weird quiet. It's very definitively not a hot stove in Major League Baseball. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227 is our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico, with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Again, 855-212-4CBS. What have been the most impactful trades? Or if you want to narrow it down to one, what is the most impactful trade in the NFL from 2019? So that would include going back to the beginning of the new league year, which takes place in March, and all the various moves that have been made since then. It's actually kind of crazy to look back at the list of names. I found this website that is, in fact, NFLTradeRumors.com. But once it's not a rumor anymore and it's an actual trade, there's a list. And the list is extensive. Now, it does include all the trades that were made during the draft. But before and after, we're talking about players. We're talking about assets that you can see and hear and go back and look at their history and their tape, not just ethereal potential superstars in the future. In case you're wondering about the chronological order, the very first trades were Joe Flacco and Case Keenum, going back to March 13th. The most recent trades being made late October. And in fact, the last one before the deadline, Aqib Talib from the Rams to the Dolphins. So you can find us on Twitter or on Facebook. If you haven't voted for Monday MVP, well, that poll is probably wrapping up soon, and we'll share the results moving forward. Whew, deep breath. We are now post week 10 in the NFL. Brian is listening in Atlanta. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good to hear. So being a lifelong Browns fan, I really wish I could say that the OBJ trade has been the most impactful.
I bet.
Can't do that. But with that being said, I heard something about the Rams defense since Jalen Ramsey came over. Was like the fifth best defense in terms of pass since he got there. I think coupled with that and the ability to let go of Talib, that's my vote for the most impactful.
Yeah, it's definitely been an upgrade. And by upgrade, I also mean getting younger and shedding some salary for the Rams secondary. And that was a concerted effort. Kind of strange, though, if you consider that this team went to the NFC Championship, won it, went on to the Super Bowl. The defense was really good, even in the Super Bowl. And yet there have been times when it's been spotty. That front seven is still really strong, can get to quarterbacks. But the secondary, partly because of injuries, somewhat because of age, but just needed to have a facelift. And Wade Phillips and Sean McVay working together on the defensive side of the ball, they feel like they've not just made a move for the current, but also for the future. And Jalen Ramsey is a big part of that. And the fact that they don't have to pay him right away in this offseason, I think, is also significant.
Always nice to get something for free, especially a player as good as Ramsey.
Free. I feel like free is probably a bit of an overstatement.
Well, yeah, that might be stretching it. At least for the time being.
I mean, they still have to pay his salary. They just don't have to give him the new signing bonus and the new guaranteed money yet. But if they want to keep him, that will definitely be in the very near future.
Fair enough.
All right, Brian, thanks so much for your phone call.
Take care.
855-212-4227. It's funny because NFL trades didn't used to be a thing. I mean, we've had trades. I'm not saying it was non-existent. But in terms of impactful players really changing hands, in terms of a team giving up a first-round pick or multiple picks for starters and Pro Bowlers, maybe even All-Pro players, that's something that seems more recent, at least the number of moves that have been made via trade, where in Major League Baseball, in the NBA, I mean, that seems like it's always a major part of the storyline, but recently in the NFL, we're starting to see more and more of this. And I think it adds a whole level, a layer of the business to it, but it also adds some interest too, because you've got the ability now to bring in players and teams. It seems to me that teams, I don't want to say they're devaluing picks, because of course the first round picks, especially high first round draft picks, are very often starters in most of the first round, you could say. You could look around and there would be starters. But in the competitive nature and the competitive atmosphere that is the NFL, teams want to win now. They don't necessarily want to wait until a rookie can get acclimated or a young player can get up to speed. If you're looking for impact players because you believe you have a team that's one guy away or two guys away or one missing piece away, we've seen franchises, general managers more apt to take that leap, as they used to be maybe reluctant. Now you can see them being more aggressive when it comes to the trades. So it's kind of cool that we now add that element a little more in October. But, I mean, these stretch all the way back to March. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio on our Facebook page. Let's see. A lot of you pointing to Minkah Fitzpatrick for the Steelers. Tim on Facebook says, before the trade, Steelers giving up 30.5 points per game. After the trade, 17 points per game. Adam points to his 5 interceptions, totally changed the secondary. Tim says Clay Matthews. Gosh, I had even forgotten about Clay Matthews. Wasn't really thinking about Clay. And it's maybe not fair because there are some moves that you can't measure necessarily by stats. But if you try to consider some of the ethereal qualities, right? So you start, was Clay Matthews traded or was he just signed as a free agent? Why do I feel like that wasn't a trade? I could be wrong. I'll have to look it up. If you consider leadership, if you consider a veteran presence, if you consider guys who can bring in, you know, the wisdom and be able to get up to speed very quickly, which is a role that I think Emmanuel Sanders fits well, and what he can do for a bunch of young guys on that receiving core for the San Francisco 49ers. And I know we're not going back to last year, but Amari Cooper did the same thing for Dallas's wide receivers. Not only was he instantly the number one, who is known for running routes and his discipline, but also his ability to bring out the best and to set an example and a tone for the other guys that that the Dallas Cowboys have. By the way, I don't know that we need to talk about this a whole lot, but did you see Mike Fisher's tweet or Mike Fisher's story about who is actually calling plays for the Dallas Cowboys? It's so funny that a lot of fans, and not just Cowboys fans, but fans around the country, blame Jason Garrett for everything. But according to Mike Fisher, who is a Cowboys insider, CowboysSI.com, he's been on the show, Kellen Moore calls the plays. It's not Jason Garrett. You don't get to blame Jason Garrett for putting Ezekiel Elliott in a position where he was not set up to succeed. Nope, that was Kellen Moore. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.